Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is Soundcheck. I'm Erin McKeown. We were just talking about the rituals of creative people. Now we're going to take a look at a band that has become known for very different kind of rituals. I'm talking about Black Sabbath. The band had the number one album in the country last week, and here with me in the studio, ready to talk about it, is music editor for Time Out New York, Steve Smith. Hello, Steve. Welcome to Soundcheck.
Hi, how are you?
Well, I have to say that today is the first time I will have ever heard Black Sabbath. I grew up in a pop culture hole, and anything before 1996 I didn't hear. And so first it was out of ignorance that I never heard Black Sabbath. Now it's out of will, right? Because now at this point I'm like, well, I've never heard them. But here we are today. This is my first time hearing Black Sabbath. Is there something I'm missing? What do you think about the fact I've never heard Black Sabbath?
Do you wear it as a badge of honor that you've not heard them yet? Or is it something where you really are sort of in public trying to correct a slight now?
I'm not trying to correct it.
Okay. Well, these things do happen. And the main thing is just to sort of come around to it. And I mean, you know, as ubiquitous as Black Sabbath is among a certain segment of the pop culture, I'm sure there are many people who have never encountered anything more than maybe a single riff in a Robert Downey Jr. movie. So, you know, I it's probably not that uncommon.
Well, maybe I have and I didn't know, or there's somewhere in the water or in the air I'll recognize some things we're going to talk about. But I certainly know that I have not heard the new album 13. But I'm told that it's their 19th studio album.
That's correct.
There's also 8 songs on it. What's going on here?
Well, you know, this is where I get into my sort of private cryptographer mode. Black Sabbath recorded 8 albums back in the 1970s with their so-called classic lineup, which was the singer Ozzy Osbourne, the guitarist Tony Iommi, the bassist Geezer Butler, and the drummer Bill Ward. And they put out 8 albums in really fast succession back when you knocked out 2 albums a year. And they sort of spiraled into a haze of drugs and animosity. And after 8 albums, Ozzy walked out the door. Black Sabbath continued onward for, you know, well into the 90s with a series of other singers. And some of them were more successful than others. Ronnie James Dio was the next singer after Ozzy Osbourne. And he's an iconic heavy metal guy. So the audience took to him. And they had some real success on the albums they made with Ronnie. My pet theory about the title 13 is that if you just take the 8 albums with Ozzy Osbourne, the 3 albums with Ronnie James Dio, and the 1 album with Ian Glover from Deep Purple, and you erase all the other ones that are sort of marginal, then this one would be number 13 if those others just never existed.
I wish I could do that with, like, relationships or...
Wouldn't it be great? you know, just sort of redact your past. But it was a shame that the 4 of them couldn't come back together. You know, originally when they announced this reunion and Henry Rollins presided over their press conference, and it was an exciting thing because they were all 4 there. But there were contractual, you know, animosities. And, you know, basically the drummer Bill Ward is not along for the ride. And, you know, I was skeptical. I think the album works remarkably well. I'll put my cards on the table. But I was skeptical going into it. And, you know, you're still not going to say that 13 is on a par with the early Black Sabbath records. But it's certainly, it's faithful to their spirit, and it's an honorable way to, I don't know, perhaps close a career.
From the light.
one of us is headbanging in the studio listening to that.
Yeah, and I was moving around a little bit too, actually. No, I saw. It has that effect. I mean, even unconsciously, you were bobbing your head too. It's just, you know, this band is known for setting up, you know, grooves that sort of make you move spontaneously and really, really memorable riffs. Those are the two things, and I think that 13 delivers those really well.
We're talking with Steve Smith, music editor for Time Out New York, about the long-running heavy metal band Black Sabbath. I'm Erin McKeown, in for John Schaefer on Soundcheck. We heard a little bit of Ozzy Osbourne's vocals on that track. And of course, for someone who doesn't know Black Sabbath, I only know Ozzy Osbourne from his reality TV show days. I'm going to have a hard time taking him seriously as a singer here. Why should I?
You know, for the other members of Black Sabbath who were in and out of the band for years and years and years, this is kind of a return to form. But I would say for Ozzy, in a sense, this is kind of a return to dignity. You know, the first three or four albums of his solo career were really, really strong albums, and he was a chart-topping entity. And then somewhere along the line, he morphed into this kind of slightly fuzzy, muzzy sort of paterfamilias on reality TV. And, you know, suddenly we've gone from Ozzy and Harriet to Ozzy and Sharon. And, you know, Ozzy was never the most technically virtuosic singer, but what he had was heart and a believable kind of despair to his voice. I mean, early Black Sabbath, you know, it was a product of its time. It was coming out of Vietnam, and it was also coming out of, you know, impoverished industrial areas in England. And so this was kind of the white kid's blues for British music. And, you know, these guys especially, they came straight out of being a blues band, and you never, ever lose sight of that in the first handful of albums, and you hear it again really strongly in 13. One of the great things about 13 is that they've got that kind of blues-based alchemy again. You know, the album swings in its best points, and, you know, Tony plays like he plays solos like a blues master. And Ozzy, to his infinite credit, you know, rises to the challenge and gets that mood precisely.
Well, let's talk about a track from 13, Dear Father. And this track has some sound effects at the end of it that are, in fact, similar to sound effects that begin the 1970 debut album Black Sabbath, so that I wonder, I'm thinking like in your iTunes player, do you put them next to each other? Do they fade into each other? Is this some sort of like, here we are back at the beginning? Is this new life, or is this Black Sabbath is done?
Well, the question you're posing is actually the question that explicitly starts 13 as well. The very first thing that Ozzy sings on this album, and, you know, forgive the bad poetry, it's always been that way, but the very first thing he says is this the end of the beginning or the beginning of the end? Either way you look at it, I feel like something about 13 is meant to be closure and a return to where they all started. I don't want to get too deeply into psychological motivations. But very honestly, this is an album where the primary architect, Tony Iommi, has been facing a fight against lymphoma in public for the last year. And Ronnie James Dio, the singer in another version of Black Sabbath, which recently reunited under the name Heaven and Hell, you know, Ronnie James Dio just lost a battle to cancer very, very quickly. So mortality has to be on Tony's mind. And the notion of bringing this grand project of his back around full circle, I think, becomes explicit in the moment that you're talking about. Because at the very end, after Dear Father goes through its sort of bluesy, you know, paroxysms and whatever, at the end, you hear the rainstorm, and you hear a bell, and you hear thunder. It's basically a 21st century digital update of exactly the same sounds that started the very first Black Sabbath record. So I think it bookends a career, if that is indeed the case. I've heard rumors since that they're enjoying themselves so much they might go forward, but I think that they went into this wanting to make this statement.
Let's listen. Dear Father.
Yeah.
That was Dear Father, Black Sabbath, from their new album, 13. I'm talking with Steve Smith, music editor for Time Out New York. I'm Erin McKeown, in for John Schaefer on Soundcheck. Steve, you are a self-professed Sabbathologist, if I said that right.
Sabbathologist, exactly.
All right, you're
exactly.
a Sabbathologist.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're going to do Sabbath for Dummies, me being the dummy who has not heard much Sabbath now, except for a few clips. We're going to pick some songs.
Sure.
Play it for me, and I'll react. What's the first song you want to do?
Well, let's start at the very beginning, because it's an awfully good place to start.
I'm dying to say this. We're about to listen to Black Sabbath by Black Sabbath from the record Black Sabbath. So that was it. That was Black Sabbath by Black Sabbath from Black Sabbath. I mean, honestly, listening to it, I guess I'm surprised by how much space is in the music. When I think of heavy metal, I think of like that never stops.
Sure. You're thinking of that riffing intensity that sort of came along with a slightly later band. Judas Priest and Iron Maiden sort of amplified the testosterone factor, and then when you took that out to, of all places, the Bay Area, and you gave it to Metallica and Slayer, all of a sudden it's aggression overdrive. And I'll say that I mean coming to this album again, I responded the same way that you are. It also seemed anomalous to have something that was so slow and so spacious. In it, over time, it has become extremely influential. I mean, you know, two major subsects of the metal religion, stoner metal and doom metal, you know, can be traced almost entirely back to this one record. So it was iconic, and it continues to resonate.
Let's go to our second clip now. This is Iron Man. My impression of that is of 1,000 young men in their basements practicing that drum entry. That's what I imagine. I've certainly, in all the guitar stores I've been in my lifetime, I have heard that riff before. This is one of those songs that is sort of in the pop culture air. It's been made fun of plenty of times.
It's a total Beavis and Butthead kind of a riff. And, you know, if you're going to own one Black Sabbath record, arguably Paranoid is the one, because you get Iron Man, which has that super memorable riff, and I am Iron Man. I mean, how bad would that Robert Downey Jr. movie have been if they hadn't licensed that tune? It just had to be there. And the title track, Paranoid, similarly, it's one that you've heard even though you don't know you've heard it. Practically every song on the album spawned one or two bands that took that song as their name. So, you know, that one is a high watermark for metal and for rock in general. And yes, audience, I saw Erin bobbing her head too.
It's kind of, honestly, it's kind of hard not to.
Exactly. That's the point.
That's the point. All right, you have one more song for me today. What is it?
The last song in the stack is Sweet Leaf, which you can imagine what's being referred to here, because, you know, if you're talking about teenagers and heavy metal and you know, banging your head, there are certain chemical inducements that can make that process more enjoyable, more mellow. And so, you know, if you cue this song up, the first thing you hear is Ozzy clearing his throat, and then, again, one of those Tony Iommi riffs that's been stolen by everybody from Anthrax to the Beastie Boys to the Butthole Surfers. Everybody has stolen this riff, and that's another crucial part of what Black Sabbath is all about. All right
now. My guest is Steve Smith, music editor at Time Out New York, who may have possibly gotten me interested in Black Sabbath. Thanks so much for being here, Steve.
Thank you.